Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to the Everything is Time podcast. My name is Jeremy.
My name is Ruby.
Look at that. You introduced yourself this episode, unlike the last one.
All right. Jeremy's still salty about that.
No.
Why don't you just take me introducing myself from one of our like previous episodes and just like edit it in?
Oh, no. Why would I do that?
I don't know. Maybe because you're my co-host? I don't like that for you. Like, what does that even mean? That's like, yeah, Ruby, I knew this was a disaster, but we're still going to just leave it like that.
No, it wasn't a disaster. I just think it's important that the people know that from episode 2 now onward, you're finally going to be a woman of the people.
Right. And what was I the first episode?
Some sort of monarch, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I really appreciate you deciding to slum it with the rest of us.
Right. Exactly. That's a theme for the episode.
We, again, don't have a topic, so we're just going to wing it.
Yeah, I don't know if this is really in our benefit to not have topics each week. I don't know if we do better. Honestly, after 2 years, I don't know if we do better with structure or not at all.
No, it's a mystery. This is our Scooby-Doo mystery.
Good. Great. I mean, I like structure, so I'm always here to be like, we should pick a topic. Jeremy's like, we can just talk. But I'm like, okay, sure.
In general, are you a person who likes structure?
I do, yeah. I don't enjoy just the spontaneity of certain things.
Is it all aspects of your life that you rely on structure?
That's an interesting question. Thanks for interviewing me, Jeremy.
Welcome. Hi, I'm Barbara Walters.
I don't know how to answer that question, honestly. Okay, how do you answer that?
Okay, maybe it's easier to answer. What parts of your life do you not need rigid structure in?
Do I not need rigid structure in?
For example, when you plan a vacation or a trip, do you have to have an itinerary? Or are you one of the people that's just like, we'll go to the area and we'll find things to do when we get there?
So I like to plan, but I don't like to plan to the minute. So like I'll go somewhere. If we're going to like New Mexico or something, maybe there'll be like 2 or 3 things I definitely want to do. But the rest of the time I'm like, we'll find whatever's there and do that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really care. I'm not going to be one of those people who's like, and at 8:45, we have breakfast. Like, it's not me. No.
That's interesting. I think I'm the same way. The only thing I kind of care about is just a general start time for the day. Like, I don't want to start a day on a vacation. It's some days it's fine, but like at noon or something where half your day is already gone.
Right.
But I mean, I suppose if you had like a really long night the day before, then that's fine.
How do you deal in like, so I mean, you're pretty structured too, right? Just in your daily life?
I would say so.
So how does that work with maybe friends who aren't as structured as you? And how do you guys like coordinate to do things with friends who are not as like, who are very just like, I will maybe come over and I'll just call you spontaneously and we'll go do something.
So I am a little weird in that I don't mind a cold call. Mm-hmm. I don't mind a spontaneous call from somebody. Usually if someone calls me, I pick it up, which is not, most people in my generation, I think, prefer texting. I like texting, but like I'd much rather just have a phone call usually.
Mm-hmm.
However, the one thing I do not like is people that are super flaky. 15 minutes before we're supposed to go do something, you get a text message that's like, actually, I'm not going to go. I don't like that at all.
What about people who just are like, call you up and like, hey, in an hour, you want to go do this?
I'm okay with that. I mean, as long as me saying no 50% of the time is not taken as an insult, sure.
Okay. So you're pretty up to like, if somebody were to call you an hour before, there'd be a 50% chance you would go do that. Because for me, that's a no. Like maybe if I wasn't doing anything, well, no, not even if I was, I have to like mentally be like, okay, I'm going to go out tonight. I don't really feel like going out and doing something mm-hmm. if it's an hour before. If they let me know at the beginning of the day, sure. But like if it's an hour before and they call me and they're like, hey, be ready in like 30 minutes to an hour to go do something, I don't know how happy I'm going to be about that.
Well, if they say be ready, that's not a do you want to go? That's just a command.
No, I mean, I mean, if they're like, if they call me and they're like, hey, I like, let's go see this or let's go to this, like somewhere in like an hour or 30 minutes. Like, are you down to go do that tonight? I don't really know how many times I'm I don't think I would say yes to that. I think I need to be a little bit more planned. Like, let me know by noon if you want to hang out in the evening. Like, I don't like the hour notice because normally I have other things planned already.
So. Really, what you're saying is you're too busy for other people.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I have scheduled other things. So I do not appreciate being like, let me just not do this. Because then I'm like, when am I going to fit it in another time? I mean, I think I'm more rigid in that. Like, I will pick up a cold call, FaceTime also, but not like, I don't know, like doing something like an hour before.
See,
it's normally not.
I don't believe that you pick up cold calls because I believe everything goes to voicemail with you.
If you are lucky enough to make it onto my home screen where I see your caller ID, I will pick it up for sure. Otherwise, leave a voicemail.
What I really love is when we have a phone call and like one of our lines drops and I try to call you back and I go to voicemail. It feels really fulfilling for me. As long as me saying no is not taken as an insult, like I said before, I'm fine with it. I actually like the decisiveness of some people that are of that manner. If they have a clear idea of where they want to go and what they want to do, those are less decisions that I have to make when we go do something. It's almost easier than the whole, what do you want to do? What do you want to do?
That's that's something we're really bad at, which I think makes us hang out like.
Where's that sentence going?
Like, it's just.
You tell.
Not you, pointing your mic at the screen. I was like, all the way from Texas. Anyway, no, I mean, us hanging out is sometimes struggle bus because it's literally Jeremy coming over and us standing in the room for like 5 minutes being like, so what do you want to do? What do you want to do? And Jeremy being like, I don't care. We can do whatever, which I absolutely hate. So yeah, you know what? I do enjoy the people who are decisive like that as well. It just said most of the time, if they ask me an hour before, I'm not a huge fan of that. But I do appreciate that when I do hang out with them, most of the time, it's like we get choices made pretty quickly. Whereas sometimes with my friends who are not as decisive, takes a little longer.
So basically what you're saying is you appreciate the decisive people. They just don't make it into your schedule. You can't make time for them, but you appreciate them.
No, that's not true. You can be decisive and not call me an hour before to be like, let's hang out. It's a claim that all of my decisive friends are just calling me an hour before they want to hang out, because that's not true. If anything, my decisive friends know me really well to the point where they're like, okay, I know you, Ruby, here's the cal, do you want to go hang out on this day? Like, they know me to the point where it's not really an issue.
Wow. So are you claiming that I don't know you then? Is this just one big attack saying that your indecisive friends don't know you as well as your decisive friends? Wow.
You and I are both like I am way more indecisive than you, but together, you and I, in general, when it comes to doing things, we're both very indecisive. I think the only time we have hung out that we were both decisive on something is when we decided to go see that exhibit at the Modern Art Museum. We were both like, yes, we're going to go see this exhibit. Any other time, it has literally been like, you want to go to Big Lots? Sure. Like, it's never like an actual plan. It's like, hey, you want to go to like see the model plane store? Because it's right there. Like, literally, we never have a plan.
Look, here's the deal. For us...
And actually, you know... Okay, go ahead. Fine. I want to hear you explain.
No. I'm used to being interrupted by royalty.
And actually, what? What is that sentence?
No, I was just saying, I'm used to being interrupted, so go ahead.
Please. Oh my God, the audacity of this. And you know what? I tried to be the decisive friend in the friendship after I realized we were both indecisive. I'm like, hey, Jeremy, why don't we go bowling? And then Jeremy was just like, no, I don't want to go bowling with you, Ruby. That's a true story. Based on a true story.
No, the true story is that, picture it, okay? It's my 12th birthday. There is...
a couple of years.
Yeah.
Just a few.
I invited a bunch of people to go bowling. Because, you know, I'm into bowling. It's one of my favorite things. I wanted to share one of my hobbies with the people in my life that I care about. And then all of a sudden, you send an invitation to someone named Ruby, right? And she sends back a reply that says, I'm not interested in your bowling or your birthday. I would prefer to stay home. That email has stuck with me forever. So whenever you ask me to go bowling, Ruby, I'm simply too traumatized by your neglectful royal behavior to be able to go bowling with you.
Right. I mean, that really was the phase that I was going through in, what was that, like seventh grade. Mm-hmm. I don't care about bowling or your birthday. That was what I wrote in my vision journal for the year. So I couldn't show up to your birthday. How many people, actually, I have questions about this birthday because I didn't go.
Clearly, we've established that.
I know it was an invite via email. Like, what exactly, like who did you invite to that? How many people went?
Like 6 or 7, I think.
Was it at Main? It was not a Main Event, was it? Was it at Main?
Okay, bowling alleys exist that are not Main Event because Main Event is not a bowling alley.
All of the bowling birthdays I went to were at Main Event. I went to a lot of bowling birthdays. Was I a good bowler? You know what? I don't know if I was a good bowler. But we will never know because Jeremy, there's a couple times I've decided to be decisive and been like, hey, let's go do this. Jeremy just shut down my ideas. So,
that's
you know.
Not true. The one time I did it was the time when you said, do you want to relive your childhood trauma by going bowling? And I said, no, thank you. The other times I'm game. Like when you say, hey, Jeremy, do you want to go to my favorite restaurant, Taco Bell? I said, sure, I guess.
That is
and we
not
went.
My train wreck to take responsibility for. Your option was Dairy Queen. And then we were
Dairy Queen would have been a better choice than Taco Bell. I stand by it.
I don't know how we ended up on Taco Bell, to be very honest with you.
Well, because you love it.
Especially because we were right next to a Whataburger.
Yes, but you don't like Whataburger.
I like it more than Taco Bell.
I don't think that's true. I remember the posters of Taco Bell you have in your room.
What would that even be? Just a poster of like a Taco Bell? Do they sell Taco Bell posters?
I would ask you. You're the fan.
Right. So that's our long story in this whole thing. The Jeremy claims that he does do things that I want to do, which I'm trying to think of one time you were super excited. I feel like if I invited you to like go on a road trip to Arkansas to go to the Purple Cow, you'd be pretty excited about that.
Oh, okay. I hated the first part of the sentence. Road trip to Arkansas.
Why would you think I'd want to go to Arkansas?
Maybe you're really into Walmart.
PSA, the only thing Arkansas is really, really should be known for is the Purple Cow.
I've gone on my tangent about the Purple Cow lore that I found, right?
I mean, you went on you went on a rant about the Purple Cow and how we loved it and we were stans. There's lore?
Have I not told you about the Purple Cow murder mystery situation?
Wait, did you heard it in like a murder mystery podcast thing?
This was traumatizing, okay? I'm like, I'm going to go listen to more podcasts because I want to learn more about what people are talking about. And I found
about murder. I want to learn more about murder.
It is. No. Yeah. It's all about murder. No, I wanted to do one of these like true crime podcasts because people are obsessed with listening to true crime things when they're doing like everyday activities. I've heard people find it to be very therapeutic. So I'm like, oh, I'll just go to this really popular true crime podcast. It had like hundreds of episodes. Like, props to y'all. Considering how much it takes to edit, props to y'all. Although you probably have an editor. I scroll to a random episode talking about a killer clown. And I'm like, this will be interesting. You know, killer clown, that's a popular trope in horror. I click on it, and it's all about like a husband and wife, and the husband has a mistress who dresses up as a clown, kills the wife, and then they leave and they flee town or whatever. And they set up a Purple Cow franchise. So it was very weird in that the one episode I scrolled to was about the restaurant that no one seems to remember, but we've talked about.
Is it just like started by an actual serial killer?
I don't think it was the first Purple Cow, but I think it was a franchise of a Purple Cow that was in Arkansas.
I mean, that's a big coincidence,
yeah.
Considering literally nobody remembers this restaurant. I mean, are there other things that you notice that like you remember, but other people just have no recollection of from when you were like younger?
The one thing that I can think of, you're going to hate because we talked about him a lot. But JJ, I don't think I've met anybody else who knows what JJ the Jet Plane is.
Yeah. That's a true statement. I understand in the sense that like it, you watch it when you're, I don't know how old we were, like
3, 5, 6, 7.
I don't know. But like literally.
I think 2 or 3, not 7. Hopefully we're not watching it at 7.
I feel like, but didn't JJ the Jet Plane come out? Anyway, I don't think it's like from like, it's not late 90s show, right? It was like the early 2000s.
I think it was like 99 to 2002 or something.
No, I don't think that's right. Maybe. They had like JJ, like the old ones, the ones that were like somehow, I want to say claymation. That's not correct.
No, that's not
But it was
correct.
Like weird. And then they had the JJ the Jet Plane that we know and like Loki Stan. But I can see how that was like, I remember those episodes and it was not that weird when I was younger. I don't understand how nobody else remembers it because it is kind of insane.
Sorry, I was fact checking the JJ statement. So the episodes that had JJ the Jet Plane theme song, which is the one that we know, were from 1998 to 2005. So it was like late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, nobody really knows. I guess you're right. Like, not that I'm going around referencing it to a lot of people, but I feel like a lot of people know what I'm talking about. Ever.
The only people I've met that know what JJ the Jet Plane is are parents that are traumatized who had to watch JJ the Jet Plane.
Yeah. Also, Sagwa, the one about the cat that was in China on PBS, that's another one that nobody else remembers. And I'm like, that was really good show. Wishbone, another one that was like, I don't really think people know what I'm talking about. I'm like, you know, the Jack Russell Terrier?
Yeah, Jack Russell Terrier.
That would go around and just like travel through time.
That was a great show. I don't think I watched that on TV. I think I had VHS tapes of Wishbone. I want to say.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like there's just some things that are just lost to only our generation and our generation alone that will never be brought back, which is fine. Do I think they need it? Well, I mean, they're rebooting JJ, so that's separate. But it's not as weird as the original JJ.
Yeah, I suppose it's a thing where every generation has things from their youth rebooted. But it does feel like our childhood is this black hole that people don't remember. And so then they can just reboot things and think people don't remember what they are. Like new Clifford CGI is a thing. I guess people remember Clifford. Isn't there a new like Velma from Scooby-Doo series that people hate?
The Mindy Kaling series, Velma?
I've heard it's very bad.
They changed everything about a lot of people are saying this show should have just been like a cartoon that Mindy Kaling made and then it didn't get greenlit. So they slapped Scooby-Doo on it and they greenlit it because like she made Velma South Asian. Daphne is also Asian. I don't know if she's East Asian. And then like the dialogue's awful. Again, these are like reviews I've seen on it. It's so bad, but they got greenlit for a second season, I think.
Really?
Which is wild, but yeah, I love Scooby-Doo, like the OG Scooby-Doo. So this did not make me happy. Especially, it's like really Mindy. You're like one of the only South Asian women in Hollywood that has a platform. And you're going to make this show. This is like, I think rated like the third worst like animated TV series. It's really bad. It's like really gotten a lot of horrible ratings. So
I'll admit, I don't know tons about Mindy Kaling. I know there was the Mindy Project, but I have not seen it.
I don't know a lot about her. I know she's in The Office, and I know she went on to do the Mindy Project, and then this. And I know she also is part of that show Never Have I Ever on Netflix. I think she is the producer or something.
So not an original show writer on Scooby-Doo.
It was...
No?
It was upsetting. It was like, okay, especially it's like such a wholesome kid show. And then, I mean, there's been a lot of versions of Scooby-Doo, and most of them are done pretty well. But, like, even I will say that the live-action Scooby-Doo that was made, I don't remember when that one was made, but the one where they, like, go to Spooky Island and stuff, that one was great. That was amazing. I didn't think they could do Scooby-Doo live-action and be that good.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Scooby-Doo movies in a while, but I remember liking them as a kid.
Yeah, they were really good. But they need to stop rebooting stuff from our childhood, quite honestly. Just make new stuff.
Yeah, but it's so much easier to just reboot the thing that already existed. You basically have the scripts and the characters.
I mean, they're also trying to change everything to be, like, not problematic, quote-unquote, now. So they're like, we're going to, like, change everything and take it all out and just repackage it as live act. A lot of Disney movies, a lot of things. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? I'm like, this is not it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there is a point where the pursuit of inclusivity and to be quote unquote woke, which is a term I don't like, doesn't always lead to the best entertainment in the world. It doesn't always fulfill the purpose or goal of being inclusive.
Yeah, a lot of it's all trying to be like politically correct, and nobody gets offended by anything, and everybody's going to be there. And it's all it doesn't create good content. I haven't found anything good to watch, unless you're watching You. Part two is coming out on Thursday, but oh otherwise, I found a lot of good series that I found recently have been from watching anime with one of my friends and going through like those, and those are honestly. Really good. And I feel like a lot of people look at cartoons and they're like, oh, these are like, you know, for like teens or kids, but there's a lot of it really well-written, well-animated anime out there. So I'm enjoying that because a lot of these new shows that are coming out are just like, just to have one in the background, maybe like, you don't really need to watch it.
Yeah, there's some cartoons that I really like. BoJack Horseman is one that's really good.
It's too sad. I didn't want to watch that. Because it just looks so depressing. And I'm like, no, I don't need a cartoon that has like melancholy undertones.
we determined from last week that if a comedy has any sort of melancholy in it, it is not a comedy, according to Ruby.
I stand by the fact that BoJack Horseman is definitely a sad show.
It is a comedy.
I think, you know what, Jeremy? I feel like Jeremy likes comedy that has this melancholy undertone to it, and then he's like, no, Ruby, it's a comedy, when in reality I think a lot of people would describe it as kind of a depressing show with some bits of like humor, you know.
No, it is a dark comedy. No one is watching a cartoon horse BoJack Horseman and be like, oh my gosh, the melodrama. No, it is a comedy.
We have different opinions on this because I feel like I would watch an episode of that and just be like super sad. And Jerry would be like, this is funny. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, what? I don't know. A lot of like regular shows just nowadays, I'm like, what are we watching? Like, what is this? Like,
it's hard to be excited about a reboot, I will say. I think a reboot would be more impactful if more time had passed.
If it was like a classic, it has to be, I mean, there's criteria. It has to be a classic show that people cared about. It can't be like some random one that nobody really cares about. It has to be the full cast, I would say.
There has to also be enough time. Like, I think the reason why people cared about Fuller House, for example, is that show had been off the air for 20 years or 25 years or how long ever, and then it came back and people were older and wanted to relive their childhood. Like, I'm not in a place where I need to relive Clifford the Big Red Dog.
I don't know how I feel, though, about them remaking cartoons in this day and age, though. Because didn't they do that with The Proud Family, and then they just tried to make it all woke? So it just completely stripped the whole show of its, like, original, like, it stripped characters of their personality, I think, is what hearing. I think that rebooted. I'm pretty sure it did.
I think it did. Yeah, I've seen advertisements for it. I haven't seen it, though.
I don't know how I would feel about them taking something that I loved so much and making it in today's day and age, because we just don't live in the same generation anymore. I think they would take out a lot of things that I found impactful and funny for the sake of like offending people. So I don't know how I'd feel about that. I don't want them to ruin it.
Yeah, but one thing that I don't think they're going to be rebooting very soon is the movie that we watched this week called From Other Worlds, a 2004 film that is a sci-fi comedy? Question mark?
Sci-fi adventure. Mm. It's like E.T., but if E.T. was like terrorizing people to do his work for him, but then like the like quest entailed was basically Nicolas Cage in National Treasure. So it's like if E.T. was like steal the Declaration of Independence for me.
Yeah, but instead of Nicolas Cage, it's Kristen Stewart. She's bizarre.
Not knockoff Kristen Stewart.
I would say the actress in this movie, who we don't know the actress's name, it doesn't really matter. She does more than Kristen Stewart. There's a lot of handography going on, a lot of strong choices with physicality, a lot of strong outfit choices. I would say stronger than what Kristen Stewart made in Twilight. But the delivery was not, there were not highs and lows. It was very monotone and questionable. I wasn't mad at it, though.
Yeah. She was, exactly what he described, basically.
But yeah, this movie opens, basically she's in what appears to be a loveless marriage with her husband, and I think there are two children. The children, there's no character development, they're just kind of around. And the big first thing that happens is that she is abducted How would you describe this abduction?
She just like goes outside to look at the night sky. And then there's just like a beam. And then I guess we're supposed to just like know she was abducted. But then the other time she's going to eat like a glass of water and she doesn't drink it. No. It's a glass of wine. And then she just pours it down the sink. And then she's like all of a sudden floating in the living room, just like, just flat, honestly, yep, levitating out the door. And they live like by a lake. They live on a lake house. So like, she's like floating out there. And then she just wakes up outside and her husband's like, well, what's going on? Because he finds her. She also keeps all a secret from her husband, which I feel like
she does.
At first, I thought that was like really mean because I was like, what are you doing? This is your husband. But then the way she went around explaining her situation to everybody made me know that she did the exact right thing by not telling him. Because she's going out to people like, I got abducted by aliens, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you've been institutionalized if you told him.
The explanations were not great. And the only other bit of evidence she had was a clam-shaped tattoo on her ribcage.
Yes.
Which was supposed to evoke aliens. Sure, I guess. There was also a whole subplot about how she was having a hard time because she was having issues coping with the alien abduction, as one would. You know,
right.
It would be traumatizing.
Who are you going to tell if you were abducted by aliens? You know, like, is that something you go, like, you tell people? Or, I mean, clearly she didn't tell anybody, but like, would you tell somebody if you were abducted by aliens?
I would tell you I was abducted by aliens.
Okay, good. I would definitely believe you. But I feel like if you were abducted by aliens, there's a good chance that I would have also experienced something similar. And then it would just be us being crazy.
Yeah.
And we would do exactly what she did, which is find a alien abduction support group at your local school?
At the rec center? I don't know. I think it was the rec center. I don't understand this because maybe she had never seen like Ancient Aliens on the History Channel, but as a connoisseur of Ancient Aliens, you don't go looking for public meetings for aliens. Like that's not where you get the true
and
alien.
And as a connoisseur for the History Channel, you would just dial them up and then you'd have your own special. That's what we would do.
Well, that's what we would do. But you also got to go to the pyramids because somehow everything is related to the pyramids. Because the aliens did the pyramids, supposedly.
I mean, wasn't this one the trade to the Empire State Building?
This one, the aliens were on top of. It wasn't the Empire State Building, but it was a very tall building in New York.
Okay. They didn't really explain that. She was just like, she went to this meeting with all these other people who've also been abducted.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know how they were supposedly helping each other in these meetings because it didn't seem like they were at all. They were just fighting.
I think it seemed like a group where you could vent about your alien abductions or sightings. I don't think it had any other purpose.
She meets this guy whose name is?
Male protagonist who is not her husband.
Exactly. She meets him.
Well, there's a weird scene where she interacts with a random guy on a bus. Who is this person? But that's not established at all. And then they both end up at the meeting and then they bond on the bus ride home. And eventually they're in a cafe.
They both have the same tattoo.
Because again, it all comes back to this clam tattoo. I will say, I don't think he had tons of character development, really. The movie felt a lot like, let's take, this is going to sound terrible, unaware middle-aged Caucasian lady to all the cultural parts of town. And treat it in a very unwoke way. The movie was not quote unquote woke at all.
Yeah.
There were moments that were pretty bad.
Yeah, there's like several scenes where like, so the guy that's helping her is African.
Mm-hmm.
And I see immigrated there. And like, there's this one scene where like this, I think it was a librarian, like, This is a whole thing. But like, basically said that he was strange. And the only description she gave that he was strange or proof was that he was African, which is very problematic.
Yeah, we'll get to the librarian because this movie, you get about halfway through and she's going around in her little escapades with her new friend. And not really doing anything concrete, but then they end up in this library with this librarian. All they do is ask for books, which was taken with severe offense by the librarian, I guess, because she's racist. It didn't say she was racist, but we can imply she was racist. And they get all these books about the Library of Alexandria because it all ties back to the Library of Alexandria. Spoiler alert, even their tattoos tie back to the Library of Alexandria.
And it's not really a tattoo. It's more like a sunburn.
Yeah, it's like one of those old school, you know, the old stamps they used to have with like the little ink pads, and you could buy stamps and you would, like the teachers would have them, they'd stamp the children. It was very that, but on her ribs.
Stamped children.
Yeah, you remember when all the children were stamped?
At your local library. for reading 100 books.
Yeah, those are the true AR points.
Exactly. Then you got to pick out just like a singular thing with like this much bubble like solution. Mm-hmm.
For sure, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, they go to the library. She's really unhappy about it. And they check out just like a bunch of books. And then this other guy comes into the library. I only remember he had really blue eyes.
Oh, you were smitten, huh? You were just staring into his eyes the whole time?
He had really blue eyes, uh-huh. But it was also simultaneously mm-hmm. super creepy because he didn't really say his lines. I don't know what direction they gave him as like what his character was. Was he the FBI, I think is what he was posing as, but at the same time, we don't know.
The anti-Nicolas Cage?
Right. And he went to the library and asked this librarian who is smitten with him if he can check out books. And so she does so gladly. And then they end up like on a date.
They do.
From that whole situation.
Yeah, they end up on a date. And the part of this that's very confusing is that, spoiler alert, he's going to be the foil to Kristen Stewart Light and her friend. But it is not established as to why he cares about the books and have information about the Library of Alexandria. Like, that is not established at all. It's just a weird scene where he flirts with a librarian and then they're on a date and they go back to the library and he gets the main character's name off of a list that was used to, like, I guess it's like a check-in list for people to go to the library.
Right, which makes no sense because he could have just done that when he was there the first day signing in.
Yeah, this was also like 2004, so she could have just given him, why would they not just give them the library cards? Like, why is there a system of writing down people that come into the library if they have the library cards to check out the books?
But they didn't have library cards.
But you can't check out a book without a library card.
Which is why they didn't check it. Oh, well, I guess they did.
They took the books. This didn't make any sense to me. Maybe in 2004, there was a system where you had to write down everybody that went into a library and where they sat.
It's kind of like in school where you check out a book and they would make you write down your name and what book it was, and then you could just take it with you.
There were not library cards for that library, though, when you were a child. It was like a school library.
None of these people took out I never saw a single library card from them.
So this is this a New York public library without library cards? Is that what we're talking about?
I guess so.
Here?
We have to insinuate that because they walked out with like handfuls of books. Or they stole them, which wouldn't put it past these two because we forgot the other key crucial information, which is they go to like the director guy of the exhibit that's working on this exhibit with the scroll from the Library of Alexandria that they think is from that. And they tell him, and of course he thinks they're crazy because here they are showing them like their matching tattoos and like, we're adopted by aliens.
The Declaration of Independence of this movie is supposedly an original scroll from the Library of Alexandria that's being studied by this New York library that doesn't have library cards. So I have questions about resources if they're studying this and don't have a system of library cards.
Jeremy is clearly very concerned about it.
Haven't they had library cards for a very long time? I don't feel like library cards are new.
Okay, but like, okay, if you have a library card, you can check a book out. But can't you just like write down your name and also take a book? That's definitely something that used to happen. I don't know. I don't know everything on libraries. I just know that they took books and they didn't have a library card.
We see, this movie is about alien abductions and we care more about the logistics of the library cards.
But the library cards.
No. So yeah, they did go to that guy who's studying the, like, it's not the Dead Sea Scroll, but it's some sort of equivalent for the Library of Alexandria. And that's what...
It would have been a different movie if it was the Dead Sea Scroll.
Would it have been a different movie? I don't think this plot hinged on any of the contents of what's in the scroll. It could have been like the scroll from Ancient Applebee's, and it would have been the same movie.
Like, you're forgetting the scroll had a purpose, because apparently, like, if it was opened, it would bring about, like, chaos, and I think the end of the world. Like, I think it was literally just like an apocalypse that would happen if it was open.
Okay, well then to be fair, a scroll from an ancient Applebee's would be the apocalypse too. Just saying.
We forgot about the ninja that's following the other main guy, the African guy. There's also this weird subplot about this like Asian guy running around in like a full black outfit, but he's running from him sometimes. And like the main guy thinks that he's just leading him places. And then they follow him on a roof. And it turns out that he's the alien.
One of the more problematic lines of this movie was, we're skipping a bit, but they go to the top of the roof and one of them, which is also not a great statement, says, oh, why did you choose to inhabit the body of an Asian? And he goes, well, because this is the most popular model. Like, that is verbatim a quote from this movie. It is not great. Very Dr. Goldfoot and We the Chinese energy. Very that.
Not me being ready to defend Dr. Goldfoot, completely forgetting about the second film where he literally went from like Chinese to just Russian at the end. Like, yeah. I don't know why. Like, now that I think about it, Dr. Goldfoot, this is such a tangent, but Dr. Goldfoot is kind of problematic. Like, why do we stand him? Do we stand him because he's problematic or because he's iconic?
I think Dr. Goldfoot is oblivious enough to where I don't know if he intends to be problematic, if that makes sense.
You think when he was trying to defeat NATO strategically?
Was it strategically? Was it? I mean, it was. But like when he said we the Chinese.
What do you mean was it strategic?
When he said we the Chinese, right? I don't think he was making some statement about wanting to appropriate culture. I think he was just saying, let me say these words together that will give me more power.
And what do you think this guy meant then?
About the Asian suit business? I think it was just a problematic line.
It was a lot. Especially because like during his whole speech, it's like they couldn't decide on what voice to give him. No. He was just like a voice modifier constantly. He changed voices at least 5 or 6 times in that whole speech.
He did, yeah. We did skip part of it in the sense that she's spending more and more time with her friend. And there's a subplot instigated by this fake personal investigator where the husband is concerned that the main character is cheating on him with her friend.
I mean, it's also strange because it's not established what she does for a living. Does she just not do anything? Because she's hanging out with her friend and like going to the library. It's like, does she not work then?
I think she's a stay-at-home mom.
Well, she's not very good at it because she also like constantly forgets her kids. Just not there for them.
She forgets her kids. And also she did something that made me nuts. This goes back earlier to what I was talking about, people that flake on things. When her husband is like, hey, people are coming to deliver cabinets today. Can you make sure you're home? She's like, absolutely, I'll be home. Misses it. He reschedules the appointment for a different day and is pretty understanding to his credit. And she just doesn't go again. That would drive me nuts.
Jeremy, what if your spouse is abducted by aliens and trying to find the Asian scroll? Can I be there when your spouse tells you that? I would love that. I need that in my life.
But yeah, so the alien on the rooftop tells them that they need to replace the current Dead Sea Scroll, we're going with it, with the new Dead Sea Scroll that has lovely flowery language in it that isn't going to destroy the world.
Yeah, it's like goodness and the live, love, laugh vibes. So they take it and there's this like whole operation to get into the museum. There's only like 2 security guards though. And their plan was to like go in there and like hit one of them over the head with a wrench, which I don't know what kind of plan that was. But they don't need to do that because the guy sees a mummy, falls to the ground. They do end up switching the scrolls, but like it's not explained how they get out of there.
Like, they just walk out.
They just walk out. And then the investigator guy shows up. I mean, okay, they do this with the help, we forgot, of the little, like, help club, whatever.
Of the support group. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, anyway, they walk out of there. And the investigator guy is there. This has also confused me because he touches the scroll and just, like, I don't really know what happens.
He touches the scroll and appears to like electrocute himself, or it was a lot. He was hurt by the scroll.
Right.
I have questions though. They definitely picked up the scroll themselves and put it in a paper bag. So does the scroll just know who's worthy and who's not?
Probably.
So the scroll that wants to kill everybody cares who's handling the scroll.
I guess it could read his bad energy. And the scroll was Teresa Caputo. And he was like, not today. So, right. Yeah.
Wow. Way to gender the scroll. Wow.
Why is it any time about, you know, this will be another podcast episode topic. I can't wait for that one. I can't wait to read out my receipt of text from Jeremy just calling me out for things that don't have any. Yeah. I'm salty about that. Anyway, so then the alien gets there and like picks up the scroll and like takes him to the rooftop. And this made me mad because then the alien's like, okay, you can go like travel the galaxy, be the first of your kind to do so. And like, he accepts it, and then the girl doesn't. And it's just like, okay. And then she decides her family is really important to her, which, like, you know, good for her, girl. But, like, also, you spent the last, like, hour being, like, not there for your family, not there for your husband. And this is kind of what your mission has all been leading up to. So, like, why would you not do it, you know?
Yeah, it did take a very big 180. I think maybe to gain sympathy with the audience, but I agree, it was just infuriating.
It was. It's like, if you're going to be just a bad, bad wife and mother, what is the switch up in the last, like, 10 minutes?
Dang, Ruby's like, if you're going to be a terrible human who hates children, who's out to just get everybody.
I'm sorry. Her son was like, will you come to my soccer game? Will you drop me off at soccer? I need to be on time. She didn't even show up to, like, pick him up from soccer or whatever. Like, no. You cannot convince me. So I was like, look, girl, if you're going to do that, then just stick with it. And she did not. And I was like, what is this? Yeah. But also, it was a very, like, goodbye scene to where, like, is it just, like, is he going to be gone for a billion years now? Like, what is the... Does he disappear? What happens to his family? Do they just die?
I think that's why she didn't go. I think that was her concern, is that she'd be up there for years and miss her family and her kids growing up. Which, sure, I mean, that makes sense, but also does not match, like you said, the character development for the first...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying, I think it was the morally right choice. It did not fall in line with any of the characters' decisions up to that point. So it was like...
Question. So say you're in this movie, you're the female protagonist. Would you have gone on the galaxy quest or no?
Wait, what does that mean? Like, I have the same life she did and I did all these things. Would I have gone on the galaxy quest? No. Would you?
Interesting.
I love how this is so hard for you. Why is it hard for you? Maybe that's my question.
Because you have an opportunity to be the first one to go and see all these cool things and to develop relationships with these alien species. And I feel like there would be a way for you to communicate back to Earth that that's what you were doing.
I mean, I don't think, yeah, no.
I'm going to say I'm going to go on the quest. If I'm her and I've made all of those choices already in the first 70% of that movie... Then yeah.
Interesting. The thing is that if you include other people in your choices in this movie, I don't think anyone would believe you. That's the thing. Like, she would have sounded psychotic to, I think, anybody else. Like, okay, imagine you're in the husband situation. Are you believing her that she was abducted and here's a tattoo?
Probably not.
What would you do?
If I were the husband?
Yeah.
I'd probably be annoying and try to deconstruct the... event forward and backward and find areas where I thought it maybe wasn't an alien abduction.
Oh, that'd really be annoying for her.
I know.
I would not do that. But I know how you can get when you're like, this makes no sense. And then Jeremy goes off and like nitpicks things. So
that's a situation where you want to be supportive, but then to some degree, too much support leads you down a road where...
Yeah, you don't want to be like, you don't want them to be delusional and you're being like, yes, this is delusional. This is fine. Mm-hmm. You know? But there's a thin line between like, okay, is this supportive or this is just like really terrible for their mental health also. So I don't really know. It's a weird scenario.
It is, yeah. So this weird movie, what would you rank it out of 10?
I think like a 7 out of 10. I enjoyed this.
Interesting. I think I'm going to go 6.5, maybe a little bit lower.
Okay.
I will say this movie we watched, I found it very funny in the moment. And then I just like wiped it from my memory.
Yeah, I know. Because when I mentioned it to him yesterday, he was like, what movie, Ruby? And I was like, the one we're reviewing tomorrow.
It was weird because we were watching another movie recently and I made a joke about the amount of handography that was happening in this movie too. I'm like, oh, there was a movie we watched where someone was doing handography, which is this movie. I couldn't place it. And then you sent me because the poster of this movie is wild. You sent it and it was like, oh my gosh. And it all came back to me all at once. It was a whole thing.
Watch this with somebody, I would say.
Yeah, not alone. That wouldn't be super fun. But yeah, that's our review of From Other Worlds. I can never remember the title of this movie.
I thought it was Girl Something, so maybe not.
Was it Xenon Girl of the 21st century or whatever the hell it was?
No, do not do Xenon like that. Xenon is iconic. I feel like Xenon, it may be one of those movies where if you watch it back, it's not as good. But I remember Xenon being iconic. Girl of the 21st century.
Whatever her name is, that's what it's called, right? Or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Icons. Yeah, but that's our movie for the week.
Yeah. And now we'll enter our new segment started last episode, This Versus That.
Oh, I know. I already know you're going to say on this. I'm going to have an argument for this. Light mode versus dark mode on the iPhone. Because I just got roasted for this, by the way, which I was not expecting from Jeremy being like, your phone's not in dark mode. I'm like, no.
Okay. I don't
light mode. Okay, go ahead. Go off.
No. I'm used to. I know. Go ahead. Interrupt me.
I don't understand dark mode. I do not understand because it doesn't turn the whole screen black. Not you sitting up for this. It doesn't turn the whole screen black. It just turns like your messages and Instagram and stuff black. And also, it's like blinding, right? Because like you're sending like messages or whatever, and it just seems so bright. And then you're in Instagram, and all the pictures are on just like dark black. Like the background is just completely black, so everything is just like in your face.
Wait a second. So your claim is that dark mode is blinding.
I find it blinding, personally. So I don't use it. It's so neon. Everything is so neon. Like, have you seen
the iPhone aesthetic
when it's, like, completely black and everything, like, the little... It's just, I don't like it. No. And then, like, if you have Instagram, which you don't have Instagram, but you should get Instagram... Is
God, here we go again.
Like so blinding on some posts. It's just so bright. I'm like, no, thank you.
I don't know. Do you know what dark mode is?
Yes, I do. Like, what does that mean? I literally have like the little shortcut on my phone to change it from dark mode to light mode.
Most people claim though that light mode is the one that's blinding because it's the bright one.
It's really not that bright. I don't know why people claim that. To me, light mode is perfect. It's not too blinding. It's not. It's just like it's good. It's a nice aesthetic, a light aesthetic. It goes with my phone. I don't understand dark mode. Like, I do not. If you're going to make a dark mode, why is it not changing more things?
It's different in most things.
It just,
I'm sorry. Vibe. Dark mode is easier on the eyes. It streamlines everything. I think everything looks a little bit classier in dark mode.
Looks like you're at a rave. It's just insane. Like, I do not understand. Like, I turned my phone to dark mode after you sent me that text. And I was just like, this is still not the vibe. But yeah.
We'll let people comment, even though you can't comment on a podcast. And let us know if dark mode is better than light mode. We'll hear you.
All right. We want to know. That'll be our Instagram post soon. Don't worry. It's coming.
Oh, interesting. Dark mode is better. I don't get it. But anyway, it's fine.
Whatever. But that's this week's This or That.
Yep, that is. Any socials that we should plug?
Instagram and Everything Is Time. But Twitter, Jeremy?
TikTok, that's it. We're done with Twitter.
TikTok, Everything Is Time. We have a YouTube channel, Everything Is Time, with like a couple videos on it.
I think those are the three main ones. That's what I'm willing to commit to now. I don't think we need to commit to 8 things.
No, we really committed to a lot the first season.
We did, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, just, you know, follow the podcast. New episodes every week.
Knock on wood. Right. I will say I edited our last one pretty quickly. We'll see if I have the willpower to keep doing that.
Well, what you said, that was very strong, like the willpower, as if it's just like
Are you mocking my determination?
No, it just if wow. you say willpower. Like if you're like, hey wow. Ruby, just deciding if I have the willpower to continue this friendship, that would be concerning. It's like
I mean, you were the one earlier who was claiming that this friendship was hard and difficult.
When did I ever say that? Those of you listening, rewind. Give me the timestamp in the comments.
It's implied from not going to the bowling party, okay?
It's implied. Honestly, that is our friendship in a nutshell. It's just like the most raging the most raging claim with it's implied after it.
I'm trying Ruby's hyperbole out. We'll see how it goes.
So wait, if you have hyperbole, what do I get?
Willpower.
Okay. I'm so glad. Anyway, I needed some of that.
That's all we have for this week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.